Psalm 33 is, I believe, one of the psalms that's written or rewritten by David as reflection upon his grace that he experienced from God as a result of his sin with Bathsheba and Uriah. And so he's praising God for his grace, and he concludes in verse 22, "Let your grace be on us, Yahweh, according as we have hope in you." In other words, he sees the grace that he had experienced as being that of all God's people. And that's why in Romans 4, David is quoted as a personification, as an example of all of us. Blessed is the man, and that first of all was David, but it is in fact all of us. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord does not impute iniquity. So then, let your grace be on us, Yahweh, according as we have hope in you. Well, there was no sacrifice that was prescribed for David's sins with Bathsheba and Uriah. Really, the death penalty was required. But David's vision of God's grace was large enough for him to ask for forgiveness. And that hope was not disappointed. So it's almost as if it depends upon the breadth of our vision of God's grace. I'll give you a similar example of someone who perhaps didn't have a wide enough vision of God's grace, and it's Abraham. He asks God to spare Sodom for the sake of 50 righteous men there. And then he lowers the number to 40, and then you remember how the story goes. He finally gets down to 10. He obviously assumed that Lot's family were righteous, and there would surely be 10 righteous. But there weren't, and so the city wasn't saved. But my question is, if Abraham had actually gone further and had said to God, "Would you save it for the sake of one?" What do you think the answer of God would have been? Would God have said, "No, Abraham, if there's 10 there, I'd save the city, but nah, not just for one"? No, I don't think that's what God would have said. I think God would have said, "Sure." And there was one righteous man there. And I think that when Peter talks about Lot as that righteous man, I think he is possibly making that point, that there was one righteous man there. There were not 10, but there was one. And so Abraham limited the salvation of Sodom because of the limitation that he had in his mind of God's grace. And we think of that man in Mark 9 who says to the Lord Jesus, "If you can do anything to help, please do." Jesus, as he often does, turns the terms of what the man has said right back upon the man. He says, "If you can believe, all things are possible to him that believes." In other words, don't imply that I'm limited. If you can do anything, well, please do. Just do what you can for me, Jesus. He's saying, no, look, I can do anything. I'm God's son. I can do absolutely anything. But it depends on you. You, as it were, have got your finger on the volume control. You can move it. And I can play as loud as you want. I can do whatever I wish. It's not that I'm limited. It's your faith that's limiting what I can do. And I think, getting back to Abraham, I think if he had actually said to God, not for the sake of any righteous men there in Sodom, but for my sake, would you have mercy on this city? I think from all that we have seen and known of God's ways through the Lord Jesus in salvation, I think we could assume that God would maybe have said yes. Okay. But again, we come back to this verse, which I think is really quite critical. "Let your grace be on us, Yahweh, according as we have hope in you." His grace is unconditional and is unlimited, but what is not so wide and unconditional and unlimited is our hope in that grace, our faith in that grace. Now, I'm not saying that you can just have what you want in terms of salvation. In other words, saying, "Oh, you just save that fellow who I see walking by outside my window." No, I'm not saying that. But I think when it comes to our own personal lives, His grace will be upon us according as we have hope in him. And that hope that we can have in him is unlimited because he loves us and his grace is enough. As he said, as the Lord Jesus had to say to Paul, my grace is sufficient for you. It is all sufficient, but it does depend upon our vision of it. And the problem is that we all tend to assume that God is a superman. He is a man, a bit more powerful than us, a bit wider than us, but all the same, more or less limited in the way that we are. In other words, to use that terrible phrase of Maxim Gorky, we assume that God was made in the image of man. Whereas man is made in the image of God, and man has not, contrary to what Gorky said, man has not created God in his own image and in his own likeness. Not ultimately, because God is God. But of course, we do tend to create God effectively after our own image and after our own likeness, because we don't consider that such and such behaviour, such and such bad habit can possibly be forgiven, then, well, we assume that that's how it is. Because we can't maybe forgive ourselves, or because we can't forgive him or her or them for what they've done, we assume that God also likewise cannot. Because we are transferring ourselves onto him. But you see, it's all the other way around. And this is where this little verse here at the end of Psalm 33 is so relevant. Let your grace be on us, Yahweh, according as we have hope in you. And as I began by saying, this is a Bathsheba psalm, and this was learnt by David. He must have been thinking, well, what are the options? Death. That's it. Being cut off from God's people, whatever quite that meant in practice, but that's what it was. And he threw himself upon God's grace. And according as he had hope in that grace, so God's grace was upon him. And this is the whole point of let your grace be on us, according as we have hope in you. That is, David's example is to be our pattern.